And that's the beauty of the performing arts industry. It gives people an escape from reality.
Yeah.
And it also makes the workforce and adult life and the general depressing rat race of life bearable. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of Mr. A Plus. Today, we have a very popular singer from here down under, who is extremely and undeniably talented. He was one half of the pop duo Savage Garden, but now he has taken a solo path. And fun fact, my parents are huge fans of Savage Garden. I must admit, their music is quite wonderful with such beautiful lyrics. Now everyone, let's give a warm welcome to the one and only Darren Hayes.
Hi, I'm such a big fan of you and your family. It's such a thrill for me to talk to you. So thank you for having me on your show.
No problem. Thank you. It's quite an honor having you on this podcast. So how are things?
Well, things right now are really busy. I forgive you for not knowing much about me because I'm quite a lot older than you. But I had taken a long time off work, maybe 10 years. So for the whole time that Australia fell in love with you, I was really making music kind of in secrecy, almost semi-retired. So for the last, I would say, 6 months or so, I've kind of re-emerged and been releasing music and getting ready to come back. But I'd been gone for a long time.
If you don't mind me asking, why is that?
It's a great question. Well, I'm 50, and when I started, I was about 19, and I had an incredible career that I was really grateful for. But I think after a long time, I felt like I had done everything that I'd set out to do.
Oh.
And I think I felt a little bit creatively bored. I think I felt like, yeah, I had done everything that I needed to do. And you might find this interesting, actually. One of the things that I did in these 10 years that I took off is I went to LA and I studied improv, which Ooh. I know is something that you've been doing.
Yes, I have.
Yeah. So I just did some things that I had never done before because I'd always been a musician and I'd always performed and made music, but I took some time out to just do things that I'd never done before. And it turned out that I really needed that. I just needed some new adventures.
That's quite impressive. Well, congratulations on your latest album, Homosexual.
Thanks.
But also, are you happy, safe and well?
Oh, that's such a beautiful question. Thank you for asking me that. Yeah, I really am. I feel like I can be honest because I talk a lot about my mental health. I live with a depressive disorder, so I live with depression. And I'm very lucky that I was diagnosed with anxiety and a major depressive disorder about 20 years ago. So I'm lucky that I have a therapist and I have a psychologist and medicine that I get to take that helps with that. Some days are better than others, but that's such a kind question to ask me. I'm doing great at the moment. Thanks
that's
for asking.
Good. Yeah. And how is your husband getting along?
Oh, he's amazing. I reckon you would really like him. He's cool. He is, when I met him, he was doing his master's degree in film, and he was teaching at university as a university lecturer, but his part-time job was sort of 3D animation. So he does a lot of special effects in films. So the two of us really love film, and he's a aspiring screenwriter, I guess. So I know you love film, and so he's doing great at the moment. He's writing a lot of adventure screenplays here in Hollywood that he's trying to sell, and he works doing a lot. His day job is kind of special effects, working with CGI and a lot of those types of things. But he's well, thank you.
That's good. Very pleased to hear. I have to ask you this. What are you most proud of regarding your work?
These are such great questions. No one asks me these questions. Thank you. What am I most proud of? with my work, I think I'm most proud of the fact that I have lasted for so long. So it's been 25 years now in an industry that, as you know, is very competitive and it's very reliant upon commercial success. And I think I've really fought to put my art first, which is not always easy to do because art doesn't often pay the rent. Art is not always successful. Sometimes art flops, but I'm really proud that I've got an audience of people that really care about what I have to say. And I really love my fans. You know, I don't think a lot of artists can say that, but the people that listen to my words or relate to my music have really grown up with me. And those people mean a lot to me. So I'm very grateful for that long history of a relationship with my fans.
That's lovely. I have to ask you, out of curiosity, do people recognize you in the street often?
No. Oh. And well, it's interesting. I don't think I look at all like any of my videos or my pictures, partly because I changed my look so much.
Oh.
And in the very beginning of my career, I used to dye my hair black. I was really obsessed with Elvis Presley when I was younger. And Elvis used to dye his hair blue black, right? So that was a look that I used to love when I was younger. And then I've always liked musicians and pop stars that change their look and they have a persona or a character that they are on stage. Yeah. And off stage, they become almost like a blank canvas. So I enjoy that. I enjoy becoming someone else when I'm on stage. Nice. And then when I'm off stage, I like disappearing into the crowd. Mm. So no, I don't get recognized almost at all.
Well, if that ever happens, do people ever ask you for selfies?
Yes. How do you feel about that? Does that happen to you a lot?
Frequently, yeah.
I imagine it does.
But it doesn't bother me at all because I kind of like the attention and because there's no harm in letting people take a selfie with you because it puts a smile on their face and it makes their day. The world needs more of that.
That's beautiful. How do you feel about boundaries, Michael, in terms of like, because I know, well, for me, you'll have to let me know about what your emotional space is like. I'm someone that I love what you just said. If I can give someone in 1 second or 5 seconds, if I can make their day, I'm going to do it.
Because
what an amazing privilege to be in. And I've seen how you have interacted with people like, you know, some of your heroes and how, you know, just meeting some actors or people that you've loved and how they've been kind to you. And that's you know, like, I love that. Right. And you're in a position now where you're a famous person and I love hearing that you can do that. But I also think it's okay if sometimes, if you are feeling overwhelmed or sometimes you're feeling anxious. For me, sometimes I do feel like sometimes I need to appeal to someone's human nature and say to them sometimes, is it okay if we just say hello? Do you mind if we don't take a photo today? And I find usually people are really great about that too. Ooh. What's your experience like that? With that sort of situation?
Well, I barely say no to selfies. Mm.
Do you ever feel, does the attention ever make you feel anxious?
No, not at all.
Oh, that's great. Sometimes it makes me feel a little bit anxious, I think, sometimes. Oh. Yeah, sometimes. But I try to not let that be shown because I appreciate what you said, which is that I think that the average person in the street, they mean nothing but love and it can take just 1 second of our day. But because I do have a mental health illness, sometimes I have anxiety. And so sometimes my anxiety can make me like inside, I feel like I'm in danger or I want to run away, but that's not their fault. So I try to navigate my own, what's going on inside my mind, you know, with what the person is wanting.
I know what it's like to live with anxiety.
For sure. Yeah. You do a great job of balancing that because
thanks.
You seem to be like someone who you give off a lot of joy, I think, in the work that you do.
Thanks.
For sure.
Well, I'm actually pursuing an acting career. That's what I've always wanted to do since I was a kid.
You know, I was in Sydney recently. Is Sydney where you've been studying?
In Sydney, but I actually live in Wollongong.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So I have friends in Wollongong, so I know where that is. But I was in Sydney recently and I was walking past, I think, one of the places that you study. And so I am a fan of you, so I follow you on social media, and I saw some pictures that you posted where you were studying, and I was like, oh my God, I know where Michael's been studying. I recognize that place.
Oh, that's, you mean Screenwise?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And I also have to ask you, what do you most enjoy about being a singer and songwriter?
You know, I think it's the ability to take an emotion that's inside me that feels locked inside and to set it free. Maybe you relate a little bit like that to acting. I don't know. But for me, with music and singing, it's like I'm so lucky that I have it as an outlet, because I have all of these big emotions, and I always have my whole life since I was a child. And I love that when I get to write a song or I get to sing on stage, it just releases all of that energy.
Wow.
And it's gone, and for a good purpose, you know. And it, I think as performers, you will relate to this. There's an exchange of energy, you know, especially when there's an audience there. I love that feeling of that immediate call and response that you get. And I that anxiety is not always a bad thing. I think that I've learned to describe my anxiety as excitement misplaced or pent up excitement. Instead of, in the past, I used to think of anxiety as in some negative ways. Now I just think of it as performing as an opportunity to release that excitement and to share it with someone else. So one of my favorite things about doing a show is that moment before. I don't get nervous. Mm. I feel the energy in the room. And when the lights first go down at a concert, and there's that feeling that you can feel the anticipation of the crowd. And it's almost like my, I don't know, it's like drawing energy like a superhero. I feel that energy from the crowd, and that's the thing that gives me the bounce, you know, to get out there and do a good show. I love that. I feel like it's human beings exchanging all of this energy together, and I love it.
So in other words, you're very passionate about the craft.
Yeah, very. Yeah. And I'm sure if you love acting, I am in awe of that, Michael, because I've studied acting, and it's definitely not my first skill. You know, I would say that here I am as a singer and here I am as an actor, you know, down here. Yeah. And I think that actors do is, it's a mystery to me, but I'm in awe of it, because to take a feeling, to take some words on a page and to turn them into human behavior and convey a message to me, it's a mystery, and I pay to see that.
This is me with acting, and this is me with singing.
Oh, I don't know about that. I haven't heard you sing yet. Who knows?
I don't even consider myself to be a singer.
See, I have this thing about singing. My husband was told when he – I think everyone should sing. I don't think everyone is a great singer, because I'm not a great athlete, but I can run, you know. So I just think it's, sometimes people are told that they're a bad singer, and I think that stops them from the joy of singing, right? I think everyone should be allowed to drive around in their car and sing Pink or whoever they like singing to, right? But sometimes I think we expect everyone to sound like Adele or to sound like a professional singer, and I think that's so unrealistic because it's so fun to sing. And when Richard was a kid, he had a teacher that really planted a negative seed in his brain, because she told him that he didn't sound good. And so for a lot of his life, he would never sing out loud because he was embarrassed. And it took him marrying a singer where I would build up his confidence and say, you sound fine, like sing, because we sing all the time in the house. And it's one of the greatest joys, I think, like just to...
Cool.
To sing, you know, birds sing, dogs sing. Yeah. Everyone makes a sound, and exactly. It's a freeing thing. So I think everyone should sing. Mm. I just don't think everyone could win X Factor. That's the difference.
Yeah. I have to ask you, was there a particular moment of your life that inspired you to pursue a career in singing and songwriting?
Yeah, there was a moment. It was in 1987, so long before you were a twinkle in your father's eye.
7 years, actually.
I went to see Michael Jackson in concert at the Brisbane Entertainment Centre. And he was at the peak of his sort of fame and his physical performance. It was like watching an Olympic athlete. He was just so, he was a perfectionist. And at that point in my life, I had a troublesome time in my life. My home life wasn't very happy. And at school, I was bullied a little bit at school. But music was, it's okay. But music was my escape. And I remember seeing, I was only 15, but I remember seeing this performer on stage. And I saw the effect that this performer had on people, and they had left their reality for a little while. People were just so happy. People were so happy. And I was so happy. And I just thought I want to do that one day. It was almost like leading. I'm not a religious person, but it looked almost like that feeling people have, you know, when they go to church or something. There was a feeling of leading a group of people into just joy. And I thought, I want to do that one day. And 10 years later, we as Savage Garden played that same entertainment center. We sold it out twice.
Wow.
So that's the power of intention and positive thinking. Yeah.
That's the beauty of the performing arts industry. It gives people an escape from reality. And it also makes the workforce and adult life and the general depressing rat race of life bearable.
Yeah, it sure does. You know, some people, there's a quote, and I'm misquoting it. You will probably know who said this. I don't know. But, you know, there's a quote about why we read. You know, we read to know that we're not alone. And that's really the point of art. You know, the human existence, the reason we create art is to try to make sense of what it is to be alive and to know that another human being has experienced what we're feeling, what we're experiencing, and we know we're not alone. And I think the privilege that you and I have right now, you know, is that we have a platform and we get to know that someone's going to listen to this conversation we're having and it might turn their day around. It might inspire them to do anything from have a podcast, to take an acting lesson, to sing.
Yeah.
Any of the things that we've talked about, you know, because we're in a position to remind humans that there's more to life than just, you know, having a job or that your job.
And having kids.
Exactly. That your job can actually be something that you love to do. Isn't that a crazy, rebellious thought that you can actually have a job that you love to do?
Exactly.
Very rarely are we told that as children, you know?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I do have to ask you this. Do you write all of your own songs, or do you collaborate with other singers?
On this recent album, I wrote everything myself, and I did everything myself. Every single sound you hear, everything is all me. But in the past, I've always collaborated. That was what was so special about this new album for me, was I decided I was going to do it all on my own. And there's nothing wrong with either process. There are pluses and minuses to both. When you collaborate, you are getting to bounce off someone else, just like when you're doing improv. You know,
exactly.
You get to yes and someone. Someone has an idea and you're like, oh, I've got an idea. How about this? And it's like ping pong.
Yeah. Congratulations once again on that new album of yours.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, Michael.
Now, let's take a little listen to a little bit of it now.
Okay.
Be in love. Let's try being in love. Let's try being in love. Be in love. I'm in love.
And since we mentioned the topic homosexual, I also wanted to show you this.
Oh, that's so kind of you. You're holding up a rainbow flag. Thank you for being an ally.
That's all right. That's, I started to have a rainbow flag in my possession to show that I support that community.
That's so kind of you. Thank you. Because there's so much, you know, Australia is such just a wonderful country. Australia was one of the first countries to allow same-sex marriage in the world. So I'm very proud to be Australian. Thanks. And I feel very, very welcome being on your show. Thanks, Michael.
That's all right. And plus, I have several friends that are actually members of that community.
Awesome. Isn't it interesting how our exposure to people outside of our own world just completely expands our compassion and our understanding?
Yeah.
I have several people in my life who would consider themselves to be on the autism spectrum. And, you know, they've just completely made me someone who is, you know, I fight for understanding and equality, and it's made me just have so much appreciation and understanding well before I even watched the show. But watching the show, I went into watching your show having people in my life who were on the spectrum. And so I loved how it was true to the people that I knew, and that it wasn't patronizing. I didn't feel like the show was exploiting. I love the show for that reason, that it helped educate people as well, you know.
Wow.
What's so interesting is I just think the word spectrum is interesting, because I feel like that about sexuality as well. I just think that we're human beings with extraordinary variation and capabilities and untapped potential.
Yeah.
That's the word for me, is potential. And I think, why wouldn't we want to have as many variations and opportunities as human beings to expand the definition of who we are and what we can achieve? We don't know which part of society is going to be the person that is going to solve these huge problems that we face. But I bet you it isn't just going to be, you know, somebody typical, because typical has had free reign for too long. And I have a problem with the word typical being related to normal.
What is normal?
No, exactly. Normal is honestly boring.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think we relate typical just with really ableism, and just this generation of people, I think, are just so much more accepting. And I'm really lucky and grateful that, and I know so many young people now that don't tolerate a lot of ignorance, and I'm looking forward to these young people getting into positions of politics and power and changing things. Because we want new ideas.
Yep. You know? And like I always say, it's time for the next generation.
Oh, please. Yes.
The older generation is way too out of date.
Yeah, there's a big gap, isn't there, between the people and the older generation power?
Should remain in the past where it belongs.
Yeah, please. Let's put that on a T-shirt.
Exactly. And I have to ask you this. Do you recall how you and Daniel Jones first met and what led to the birth of Savage Garden?
I sure do. He placed a musician's ad in a newspaper that doesn't exist anymore. It was a trade newspaper called Time Off in Brisbane. And it was like an arts music. It was where you would look up to see what bands were playing. And in the back section, they had a section for like musos wanted. So it was where you could look up if you wanted to join a band, you would place an ad. If you were a band that needed a musician, that's what you would do. And he was in a band called Red Edge with his brother Oliver and two other people. And they placed an ad looking for a singer, and it was as simple as that. It was the first audition I ever went on, and really the last, apart from when I got into acting. And I was, to be honest, I was terrible, Michael. I was so nervous. I remember calling him up first. There was a phone number, and I called up, and I sort of almost talked myself out of going. I was like, look, I don't know if I should come. I haven't had any experience. And he convinced me to turn up, and I did turn up to the audition, and I sang something from the musical Little Shop of Horrors, which was that was my favorite musical at the time. And I sang great. I did sing really well. And I got the job, and we were a covers band for a couple of years doing Australian rock songs. And that's how we met. Yeah.
Impressive.
Yeah.
A follow-up question I have is, if you don't mind me asking, what made you go solo?
Well, the band ended because Daniel didn't want to do it anymore, is the short answer. Yeah. So we made two albums that were really successful. They were identically successful. Both albums sold almost exactly the same amount of copies. Both albums had a number one single in the United States in them, each of them. I think now they've sold about 30 million copies. So each one sold about 15 million copies each. And when we were in the middle of promoting the second record, Daniel came to a realization that he didn't want to be someone in the public eye, didn't enjoy the fame aspect. And so, yeah, he decided that he didn't want to do it anymore. And for me, I mean, yeah, but 20 years later or so, you know, I've never stopped. So I'm great, really grateful. At the time, I think, you know, in the moment, it's very hard to think, why would anyone want to end this? But now I totally can't imagine being a band anymore. I'm very grateful for the time that we had, but I really love my life now. Love the music I make on my own, and I'm grateful for what we had.
That's really impressive. Over the past few days, I've been listening to some of your work, and I have to say, they're very beautiful songs, and the lyrics are also quite beautiful. They're full of soul and full of life.
Oh.
It's almost like you're putting your heart and soul out in through song form.
Thanks, Michael. Yeah, I mean, I think it has to be like that in order to connect with people.
And they're very resonating as well.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I think it has to be. And I think, you know, this as a performer, I think when you're acting, it's fake unless you do that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the reason you say a song resonates and comes from a place is because it comes from a true place. I would even say the same thing about watching you on television. I think the reason why Australians really did fall in love with you was because we could tell, you know, I feel like I knew your family, or felt like I knew you, because you weren't acting.
No,
you were being very real, you know. And thank you for saying that about the music, because that's what I try to do. And that's what I love about the music that I listen to, is I look for music that
people can resonate with.
Yeah. And that they have risked something. Because I think just you allowing a camera into your home, you're risking something, because you're being vulnerable. And I think vulnerability is the key to all resonating art, is you're risking people. You're showing a side of yourself.
Well, to be honest, when I joined Love on the Spectrum and the whole process, I didn't see it as giving up something or taking a risk.
Mm.
I thought it was a very extraordinary thing to do.
You're so brave. That's beautiful. So I got to say, just as a fan, we're very grateful that you and your family opened up your home to the world, because the world needed to see some love and chuckles and just all of it. It's just great. You're so naturally funny.
I don't try to be.
I know, but that's what makes it good, because it's your honesty and it comes from truth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because somebody has to be blunt.
Yeah, I know. Well, I think that sort of comes from your mum too. I think your mum's really funny.
Yeah. Yeah. Since you brought up my mother.
Yes.
I guess this opportunity is as good as any.
Okay.
You mind?
No, I'd love to meet your mum.
Good. Excuse me a moment. Just one sec. Mom, there's somebody who wants to meet you. Now, put these on.
Oh, okay.
Put these on real quick. Just put it on.
How cool. This is the coolest moment of all of you. Hello.
Hello, beautiful. How are you?
Oh, look at you. Oh,
look at you.
Oh, no, look at you.
I just have to say, we are such big fans of you and your family and your son. And I was just telling Michael, we were just sharing about the fact that, first of all, I think you guys are hilarious, and so just your sense of humor is amazing. I think you're an amazing mum.
Oh,
but I was talking to Michael about just the gift of just opening up your life at a time in the world where we all just needed some love. And we needed some joy, And we laughed and we cried and we chuckled. Yes. And I just want to say thanks.
Oh, wow.
And the first chance I had to talk to your son, I was like, can I please invite your parents to my show? Will you come to my show? So please, if you are around, we would love you to come.
If I'm around? Oh, my goodness. You have no idea what you're saying. You have no idea. Like, we are going to be there. Like, okay.
I'm going to be there and you're going to get treated like royalty. So that's what's going to happen.
Look, I've got to say thank you to you because the joy of your music, you have no idea. There are very few artists that can actually touch me, and you're one of them. Because when I listen to your music and the way you sing it, it's just so beautiful. The lyrics are beautiful. The way you sing it is beautiful because it comes from you.
You're going to make me cry. Well, but it's reciprocal. I feel like we were meant to meet, really, because when I watched how I have so much respect and for how you are as a family and the love that you all have for each other and your just amazing sense of humor and, you know, your son is just so smart and so funny.
He's a joy.
Oh, absolute joy. And just brought so much joy to our life in the same way you're talking to me about what music does. Like, just opening up your family to the world.
It was very raw and it was very us. Know.
And very, but very sincere.
His
openness to share love and to humor and everything himself. In the world. It was such, it's such a gift and it helped. And during sad times, we got by because of you guys. So I just want to say thanks and I love you guys. So.
Thank you. But, you know, you're just as raw and as open in your music. Your music is you. You know, I have to say things like Crash and Burn, and there's such beautiful lyrics.
Well, thank you.
To the Moon and Back. Oh, you don't realise, do you? Because the first time, I mean, this is just me. You should see me in concert. Like when I'm at your concert, I'm just going to go off, and it's not every concert, but yours I will go off. Because I have waited. Beautiful. I have waited. You have no
idea. I'm so glad I'm doing all the songs that you've said, by the way, too. Every time you've mentioned one, I've been like, oh, good, I'm so glad I'm doing that.
And you're so doing Homosexual, aren't you? It's a new one.
But not a lot of it. Some of it, but not a lot of it. I know what people want. I'm not an idiot. I'm like, I've been away for a long time. I need to play some hits.
Yeah, but you also need to play, like, your new stuff because you're
changed. I'll play some of it. Yeah. But not.
And we want to embrace you.
Yeah, I love you. You're the best.
But look, thank you so much.
Oh, my God. Thank you. I can't wait to meet you in person.
And you know what? I knew I loved you before I met you.
Oh, that's so great.
I have dripped you into life.
I feel the same way. Hair looks great, by the way.
Oh, loving thank you. Yeah. Oh, I'm going out for dinner tonight. So I thought, I'll get up, do my hair. And
schmancy. All right. Have a beautiful night.
Mwah, thank you. You're amazing. Thank you.
Oh, you are. Thank See you. Ya.
Close the door, please. Close the door, please.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sorry about all
Thank
all
you,
that.
Michael. That was meant a lot to me. Thank you very much.
Regarding your album Homosexual, why did you call it that?
Well, that word has been a very loaded word for a long time. It used to be a clinical term to sadly diagnose people like me as a mental condition. So in the 20s and 30s and 40s, psychologists used to think that being gay was a mental disorder. When I was a child, it was used as a slur. And when I first came out and as a gay man, you know, there was a lot of fear. And at a major record label, I was they were afraid of me being gay and that they tried to sort of erase that part of me. So me calling the album this was my way of reclaiming that word, having a different definition of the word and showing myself and the world that I love who I am and that I'm not afraid of that word, having a different definition.
That's
replacing my negative stereotypes that I associate with that word and replacing them with something positive.
I would say that would be very brave of you.
Yeah.
And out of all your collaborations, which singers over in the States or here down under have you enjoyed working with the most?
My favorite ever voice that I ever sang with is Olivia Newton-John. And I know and I love Olivia Newton-John. And as you know, she recently passed away. She was such a hero to me as a child. And I was lucky enough to write a song for her. Wow. And we sang together on a duets album of hers. And God bless Olivia. She's just a beautiful person. And I loved working with her. Yeah.
I also have to ask you this. Are you comfortable discussing your early life?
Yeah. Everything's an open book with me.
Well, what challenges did you face growing up?
Well, don't feel bad for me because I'm going to talk about something that might be a little bit upsetting for some people who have experienced abuse or domestic violence. And that's fine. I'm very comfortable talking about it. But I did grow up in a family with alcoholism and domestic violence. So when I was a little boy, my father was really violent with my mom. So I witnessed a lot of violence as a child, which was terrible. I will say that I'm very proud of my mother. She's a survivor. She's a domestic abuse survivor. And she eventually left my father, which was amazing. It's okay, Michael. She's a really beautiful, strong woman. And she taught me so much about love and forgiveness. And back then there weren't as many, well, many or any laws really to protect women like there are today.
Oh my God.
So it was really, it was hard for women in the 70s. And, but I'll tell you, my mum is incredible. She's 78 years of age now. She's so happy. And, you know, she has three kids. She has beautiful grandchildren. She's so full of love.
Yeah.
And you know, and I'm, like I said to you before, I've had so much access to wonderful therapy and healthcare. And I love my life. I really do. Good. I think, you know, some of that early childhood bullying that came from being a gay kid and not, I didn't really know I was gay. It took me a long time to work that out. But I've been married for 17 years to my husband. And you know what, Mike? I'm a pop star.
Yeah.
And I'm happy. So I like to really remind young people who might be struggling with some of the things that I struggled with.
Yeah.
There really is a happy ever after. And I'm living it. I'm proof positive that That's you cool. can survive challenges, you can thrive, and you can do the thing that you love to do. For a job and get paid for it.
And I do have a few more questions to ask you. What do you think you developed as a child that helped you in your career?
Gosh, you've got good questions. This is a really great interview, Michael.
Well, I can't take all the credit because Manny helped.
Hey, listen, you think I don't have a team of people around me? We all do, but you're great. Ooh. You're the showman. Listen, I believe in magic. I believe that this life, there's always something magical around the corner. I really do.
Ooh.
I really believe that there's always the chance that something extraordinary could happen at any moment, and life is an adventure. Mm. And that's what keeps me going. And I think that that's why when I was a young kid, I could look at Michael Jackson on stage and I could have this opinion that maybe I'll do that one day. Whereas somebody pessimistic or negative would think, oh, I could never do that. That would never have entered my brain. I was just so open to the possibility that magic is possible.
Impressive. That's a very positive way of looking at things. My last question for you is, do you happen to have any advice for those who have or are experiencing difficult times?
Yes, I do. Tell someone. Always tell someone. Never think that you are too much of a burden or that your problems are too much for somebody, because someone would always rather listen to your problems than hear about something terrible happening to you.
Yeah.
There's always someone to talk to, you know, and just always remember that you're so loved. You know, there's so many people in our lives that care about us.
Exactly.
And just tell someone,
That's very good advice. That's very helpful. Now, I believe we're on to our Ask Mr. A Plus segment. That's a segment towards the end of the podcast where the guest gets the chance to ask me questions, whatever's on their mind.
this is what I've been waiting for because I am such a big fan of you. So fantastic. Okay, Michael, what would be your dream role in a film? If I had a script right now and I could hand it to you, what would be on this script? What would the film be that I'm offering you this role today?
With in terms of character or genre?
Actually, that's a good question. Let me narrow it down, actually. Genre of film. What's your ideal genre of film to appear in?
Comedy.
Right, okay. Now let's get deeper. I've got a comedy script for you, okay?
Yes.
What would be a director of a film, of a comedy film that you, a director of a comedy film that you would love to work with?
I don't have a dream director to work with, to be honest. But one person I would love to work with again is Darren Ashton.
Ah, okay. And what is it about Darren Ashton that you loved working with? And what is it that you, what, tell me about Darren.
He's a really great man. And he's also a very professional, patient director.
Fantastic. Okay. I know that your favorite films change all the time and you said that you're more into TV. You hinted about this before, but now I'm curious. So what is your favorite TV show at the moment?
There's several of them because I don't watch Netflix. I still use a DVD player.
That's cool. So what are you getting through at the moment? Like is there a box set?
Yep, there's several of them. Most of them I've already watched. I'm still watching Love My Way. And I'm also going to start watching Puberty Blues because I'm quite a fan of Claudia Carvin and Susie Porter.
That's amazing. Now, that's a remake, right?
Yeah, it's a television series remake.
Yes. Wow, that's so funny because when I was a kid thousands of years ago, I watched the movie of that, and that was a very controversial television movie back in the day, or cinema show back in the day.
1979.
I should, you know what? If I play trivia, you're on my team. Okay. Imagine that I'm inviting you to dinner, right? A dinner party, and I'm cooking a meal. What would be your worst nightmare if I served up a meal for you, right? And I've just served a meal and it's, you don't know what I'm going to serve for you, but it's like the worst possible thing I could serve you. And you've come to Darren's house for dinner, the whole family, and you're like, ugh. And I've just served you a meal that's repulsive. What would be the most repulsive meal? Like, not. I'm not talking like I've served up a dead snake. I'm talking like a meal that's like, you know, an average meal. But for you, it's just like, I'm not eating that.
Pumpkin soup.
Yeah, I get it.
I hate pumpkins.
I used to hate pumpkins too. When I was a kid, my parents used to, because they would treat it like a vegetable, and they would be like, you have to eat your vegetables. And I would feel like I was going to like throw up. Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
We share that in common. Not a fan.
Mm.
But okay, follow-up question and then you can tell me to shut up. But follow-up question.
I would never tell you to shut up.
Thank you. How do you feel about pumpkin spice lattes? Oh, I can tell from the look on Michael's face, this is not good. No, guys. Nope. We're getting this is a definite no here.
Okay. Unless it's a mocha, I'm not interested.
So. Okay. I have a final question for you.
Yeah.
It is a film related question. If you were to be given the opportunity to remake a film just for fun, if someone said for fun, here's, I guess they cost like $100 million, right? Here's $100 million. And a bunch of friends, maybe you could have any of the people that you've worked with that you've met in the business. Maybe we could choose, say, Steven Spielberg or any directors we like. But someone has just said to us, we've got $100 million and we're allowed to go and remake a film just so that we can be in some of these iconic scenes in a film, right? What film would you choose?
That's a very tough question. I honestly don't really know which film I would like to remake. Although, if I was given a choice of anything, even if it's a film or television series, I'd probably do some kind of Australian version of Modern Family.
Oh, that is smart. You should pitch that. That is smart.
And I'd bring some of the best actors. Justin Clarke, Susie Porter, Shane Jacobson, Claudia Carvin, Stephen Curry.
Oh, Stephen Curry's amazing.
Yep. Even possibly Chris Hemsworth.
Yep, he's hilarious. Hey, man, thanks for everything. Thanks for talking to me.
You're welcome, Darren. Thank you so much for coming on this podcast. I really appreciate it. So thank you very much for your time.
Absolutely. I've loved it. You're welcome.
Thank you.